Oh, yeah.
Kylie.
Yep, I'm ready. Do you want me to start with the music?
No. I'll let you know a couple minutes, okay?
I'm ready.
I want to say welcome, everyone, to the Big Book Awakening Workshop with myself, Tyla, and Josie. It's so good to see everyone tonight. We are on the second half of Bill's story tonight, and we're first going to do a meditation, and then we're going to get started. So would someone like to read the set-aside prayer for the physical craving? Who's got it? Vanessa, you have it?
I got it.
Thank you.
But I read last week.
Vanessa?
It's Marie, but I read last week.
Okay. Vanessa, do you want to read?
Sure. Sorry, I couldn't find the unmute button. Yeah, I have it here. God, please enable me to set aside everything I think I know for an open mind and a new experience. Help me see the truth about my physical craving after I start to drink.
Okay. That's perfect, Rachel. Thank you. Thank you, Rachel. Welcome, everyone. Glad to see everybody here. Let me just do a quick rundown about how we got where we're at. That's always a good question. How the hell did I get here? Anyway, we started with the intro and the forewords and the circle and triangle, looking at how thousands of men and women have recovered, looking at a three-part illness, okay, and a three-part solution. I take my body, the physical craving, to the fellowship. I take my mind through the 12 steps, the recovered side, and I take my awakened spirit out into the world to be of service to God and to others, helping others, taking them through the work in all areas of my life. I still can be of service. So I take my awakened spirit out in the spiritual side of the circle and triangle. And we looked at this fact that this is a disease. We looked at the fact that this is the AA way of life in the preface, that not the AA way to quit drinking, but the AA way of life. And then we went into the doctor's opinion to see that Dr. Silkworth saw the physical craving, the physical sensitivity, a physical allergy, an abnormal reaction to alcohol. It is not a normal reaction. The average drinker, even the average hard drinker, doesn't always have that. So do I have that? I have to identify myself. Do I have that physical craving? When I put alcohol in my system or drugs, most kinds of drugs, do I lose control over the amount? Can I just have two drinks? Can I just have three drinks? Can I know when I'm going to go to the bar and have three drinks or 10 drinks? Can I determine? Do I have that abnormal reaction? So we looked at that. And then we went into Bill's story last week with Joe, looking at Bill's descent into alcoholism, Bill's bottom, identifying, was I like Bill? The important thing that we saw how to go through this work is, do I believe this? Am I like that? Did this happen to me? Asking ourselves questions, turning these statements into questions so that we have an experience rather than just knowledge, because knowledge won't get me where I need to go, but I need to have experience. So now we're at the second half of Bill's story, which before I did Big Book Awakening and worked with some of the people I've worked with, this was probably the least understood chapter to me. The second half of Bill's, the first half was boring and I didn't relate to it until I started to put my name in it. But the second half too, now I look at the second half of Bill's to see, am I willing to do this? Have I done this? And where am I at sober with the things that Bill did in the second half? This is the second half is to me the story of hope. So we're going to start on page 9. If everyone, I love that when people follow. And remember, I said to you before that this experience we're doing is a four-part experience. It is you at home transcribing your book. That's one experience. You answering the questions, and that's one experience. Meeting with your step partner, that's one experience. Coming here and sharing and hearing the group, that's another experience. It is a four-part experience. And each part is incredibly important, especially having this group experience and hearing the other people share. So we're going to start on page 9. And remember, I told you last week a question, you know, if someone pushed a drink across the table to me, would I have the power to refuse? And I hope you all considered that. So we're going to start in the middle of the page. And I like to look sometimes at that, to think back and, you know, about someone that I really partied with. You know, if you can go back, you know, into your right before you got sober, go back into that time and think of someone that you really partied hard with, someone that was really there, and then think that you get a phone call from them and they're sober. Because this was shocking to Bill that Ebby called him, right? And he didn't even know he was sober till he came over, okay? The door opened and he stood there. This is Ebby, fresh skinned and glowing. There was something about his eyes. He was explicitly different. What had happened? Do I believe if someone pushed a drink across the table to me, I'd have the power to refuse? I pushed a drink across the table. He refused it. Do I think if someone pushed some cocaine across the table to me, could I have the power to refuse it? Disappointed but curious, I wondered what had got into the fellow. He wasn't himself. You guys don't know a lot of the Ebby stories, but of all the stories of everyone in the early AA book, Ebby Thatcher's stories are the best. One time, I'll just tell you a quick one. I know so many of them. Wendy's laughing because we were laughing about it. Ebby was coming home one time drunk, like 6 in the morning. And you know, this is the middle of the 30s. This is like 30, 3:32, right? And the cars were super heavy in those days, right? And he was drunk on his ass and he drove the car right into this house. And it stopped right in the kitchen. And the lady was in there making coffee. And Ebby just rolled his window down and asked the lady, ma'am, could I have a cup of coffee? That's the kind of Ebby story. I know so many Ebby stories. Anyway, I could tell you more, but I just wanted to tell you that one because I think that one's so funny. What's this all about? I queried. Queried means I want to know the validity of it. He looked straight at me, simply but smiling. He said, I've got religion. Remember, he was a part of the Oxford group. I was aghast, shocked. So that was it. Last summer, an alcoholic crackpot. Now I suspected a little cracked about religion. He had that starry-eyed look, all right. Yes, the old boy was on fire, all right. Now, this is a typical thing that they said in the beginning, the old boy was on fire. Now, this fire that Bill W. saw in Ebby, that Ebby was on fire, remember, that fire that was lit right here that he saw was the fire that gave the spark. Remember in the meeting in the forward to the second edition, they said the spark that was to fly was the meeting between Bill W. and Dr. Bob. Well, that spark came from this fire right here. But bless his heart, let him rant. Besides, my gin would last longer than his preaching. Do I associate with alcoholics or who are on fire for their recovery? Do you guys associate with people? I do, because I'm a BBA. I think the people in our group are on fire for their recovery. And I think it's important to be around people that are on fire for recovery. But he did no ranting. In a matter-of-fact way, he told how two men had appeared in court persuading the judge to suspend his commitment. They have told of a simple religious idea, Oxford group, and a practical program of action. That was 2 months ago, and the result was self-evident. It worked. So when he went to court, Roland Hazard was Ebby Thatcher's sponsor, and Roland Hazard was incredibly well-versed in the Oxford group. I mean, more than probably any other person. In fact, he stayed in the Oxford group his whole life. He never went to Alcoholics Anonymous and he died sober. And he had a very tough life. And years later, he lost both of his sons. But he went there, and him and Shep Cornell went there and got Ebby off and said that they would take him and help him. He had come to pass it. Oh, also, I told you last week that there's 49 promises in this chapter. I can point them all out to you, but I'm afraid it's going to make it. When I was working with Mariana, she said there was 48. I think we missed one. I can point them all out to you as we go through if you really want to know them, but I don't want to make the reading choppy to have to say there's a promise. I'll say sometimes. So if you want the promises, if you want me to say them, I will, but you'll have to kind of open, unmute and tell me. Anybody want me to tell the promises?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
I want them.
Yep.
Who? Anybody else? I better hear from you guys.
Yes.
Yep, yep.
Yes. Okay. So let me go over the promises. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to go over the promises on this page quickly.
Right, go for it.
What I do is put a P next to the promises. I put P1, P2, P3. I only do them on each page. First promise on this page is top of the page. He was sober. Promise one. Second promise, where he said the door opened, he stood there, fresh skinned and glowing. Promise two. Promise three, he had that starry-eyed look. Promise three. Promise four, the old boy was on fire, right? Promise four. Promise five, that was 2 months ago, and the result was self-evident. The result was self-evident, promise five. So here's Ebby. He's 2 months sober. How many of you know people that are 2 months sober that are 12-stepping people? I don't know anyone. Right? And who called who? Right? Ebby didn't meet Bill at a meeting and give him his business card and say, call me if you need me. Ebby called Bill. And now, worse than that, people are giving their friggin' emails. Are you kidding me? Really? I mean, I see this. I just can't even believe it. Do we jump to call someone that's struggling, drunk or sober? Remember, I was 12-step smoking crack and drinking vodka and doing prostitution. And the guy talked to me for 2 hours when I was in a motel, living in a motel. And he talked to me for 2 hours. He didn't say, oh, I'll come and see you when you're sober, Tyler. No, people can be under the influence and they can get this. Bill did. I did. I know lots of them. Don't hesitate. If someone is willing to listen, if they're under the influence, do not hesitate to talk to them. And it's good to bring someone with you. But see this? What if Abby had waited for Bill to be sober. Alcoholics Anonymous might not exist. What a thought. Thank God he didn't. Okay, next page. Here we go. I got us to go back to the other page for now. He had come to pass his experience along to me if I cared to have it. I was shocked, but interested. Certainly, I was interested. I had to be, for I was hopeless. Okay, they're trying to get me to see that I'm as hopeless as Bill. Can I see without God in the AA program, I am as hopeless as Bill? I hope you guys can see that. Okay, I'm going to skip next paragraph. That wartime day in old Winchester Cathedral came back again. Bill mentions the Winchester Cathedral experience, I think, 5 times in the first half of Bill's and the second half. When Bill was in the war, in World War I in England, he went into Winchester Cathedral and he had a spiritual experience there. He doesn't tell in here exactly what happened, but he went in there to pray and he felt the presence of God so profoundly that he went outside and wept. So he's going to mention it a few more times. I had always believed in a power greater than myself. I had often pondered these things. I was not an atheist. Few people are, for that means blind faith in the strange proposition that this universe originated in a cipher and aimlessly rushes nowhere. My intellectual heroes, the chemists, the astronomers, even the evolutionists, suggested vast laws and forces at work. Despite contrary indications, I had little doubt that a mighty purpose and rhythm underlay all. How could there be so much of precise and immutable law and no intelligence? I simply had to believe in a spirit of the universe who knew neither time nor limitation, but that was as far as I had gone. Okay, so Bill is now telling us he can believe in an impersonal God. Has my belief in an impersonal God given me the power to stay sober and clean for good? This is an impersonal God, and that's what Bill can go for, okay? But with ministers in the world's religions, I parted right there. Oh, so did I when I was new, believe me. When they talked of a God personal to me, now these are the attributes of a personal God who was love, superhuman strength, and direction, I became irritated and my mind snapped shut at such a theory. Do I need a personal concept of God? Has the one I've had taken me far enough? Okay. Now, remember, Bill's drunk. All the next few pages, Bill's drunk still. To Christ, I conceded the certainty of a great man. What is my attitude towards Christ? Christ's teaching, and how has it affected my concept of God? Not too closely followed by those who claimed him. His moral teachings, most excellent. For myself, I had adapted those parts which seemed convenient and not too difficult. The rest I disregarded. So I say to myself, am I just doing parts of the AA program that are convenient and not too difficult? And am I disregarding the rest? Am I disregarding an 8-step that I haven't finished all the amends on? Am I disregarding prayer and meditation? I just do it when it's convenient. Check it out. Okay. The wars which had been fought, the burnings and chicanery, which is trickery. So I'm going to go back. The wars which had been fought, the burnings and trickery that religious dispute had facilitated made me sick. I honestly doubted whether on balance the religions of mankind had done any good. Judging from what I had seen in Europe, and since the power of God in human affairs was negligible, the brotherhood of man, a grim jest, a grim joke. If there was a devil, oh, now here we go. He seemed the boss universal and he certainly had me. Okay, now we see. Okay, Bill. Bill can't believe in a personal God, but he believes in a personal devil. And the devil has him. So we know we can believe, but he's in the wrong thing. Not that I don't believe in the devil, because I do. But now he believes in the devil. And you know what? When I was out there doing all the drugs and alcohol, I used to look in the mirror. I don't know if you guys did this. I would look in the mirror and I could hardly look in the mirror at the end because I could see in my eyes that there was something living in me that wasn't me. I used to tell my friends, you know what? I need to get an exorcism. There is evil spirits living in me. I know probably none of you experienced that, right? But I could feel it inside of me. I mean, I felt haunted. And that's what they're going to ask us to look at when we get to the bedevilment. So I'm going to ask you, where was Bill in that paragraph looking for a concept of God? Inside or outside? Where was he looking? Inside or outside? What do you think? He was looking outside. Maybe he would have been better he would have better results if he looked inside, but he's looking at everything in the world. He's not looking inside his soul for what does God really mean to me. So I ask you, consider this, okay? Can you consider the connection between the devil, bedevilments, spiritual malady, spiritual disease, spiritually sick, ego, insanity, unmanageability, and untreated alcoholism? Just a thing to consider. Okay, here we go. But my friend sat before me and he made the point blank declaration. Here's promise one. This is the promise one. He made the point blank declaration that God had done for him what he could not do for himself. His human will had failed. Doctors had pronounced him incurable. Did my human will fail? Absolutely. And did people, no one pronounced me incurable because I didn't go to any doctors. Society was about to lock him up. Oh, I've been locked up. Like myself, he had admitted complete defeat. Okay, this is Bill's first step right here. He admitted complete defeat. Now, remember when I told you that when we were in the foreword to the second edition and Bill said he couldn't accept all the Oxford Group's six steps, he couldn't accept deflation of ego at depth. Here it is. Remember I said, look on page 11, it's right there. He admitted a complete defeat. So obviously he didn't have trouble with it because he admitted before he ever met with Dr. Bob. It's right here in the book, okay? So he said, just like Ebby, he admitted complete defeat. Then he had, in effect, here is promise two, been raised from the dead. Oh my God, I have been raised from the dead sober. I was so raised from the dead when I was in that motel room doing prostitution and John 12 stepped me. You will be raised from the dead more than once. Because you know sometimes we're the walking dead, and I don't want to be the walking dead, but you can be raised from the dead, promise two. And suddenly, promise three, taken from a scrap heap to a level of life better than the best you had ever known. And let me tell you something, every time through 12 steps, I am taken to a level of life better than I've ever known every time. Right, Wendy? It's not one time, it's every time through the work. Had this power originated in him? Obviously it had not. There had been no more power in him than there was in me at that minute, and that was none at all. That floored me. It began to look as though religious people were right. Oh boy, Bill's really having a hard time now. This is Bill seeing this and saying religious people are right. After all, here's another promise. This is promise three. Promise four, sorry. Here was something at work in the human heart which had done the impossible. Not the human head, the human heart. He's not talking about the mind right now. He's talking about the heart. My ideas of promise five. I hope I've given you the right order of the promises. Promise five. Thank you. My ideas about miracles were drastically revised right then. Never mind the musty past. Promise six. Here sat a miracle directly across the kitchen table. He shouted great tidings. He shouted great news. That was the result. That's what Bill saw. Bill saw the miracle. He took step two. He saw the miracle in Ebby. He admitted defeat and he was on his way. I saw that my friend was much more than inwardly reorganized. He was on a different footing. His roots grasped a new soil, okay? His life had been recreated. Remember in the doctor's opinion, Dr. Silkworth said, if my ideals are grounded in a power greater than myself, my life will be recreated. Right now, it says he was reorganized. He was on a different footing. His roots grasped a new soil. Okay. The new soil that his roots grasped was the consciousness of the presence of God. Okay. Promise one, he was on a different footing. Promise two, his roots grasped a new soil. Okay. Remember, he's still drunk. Despite the living example of my friend, aren't we difficult? You know what? John came in and 12-stepped me and I was smoking crack and drinking vodka. And John said to me, I didn't even know this guy, but because one of my Johns kept bugging me about talking to this drug and alcohol counselor. And you know, I want to say I don't have a problem. I never heard of recovery in my life. You know, I was absolutely a mess. And this guy walked in and he said, you know, my name's John. I'm an alcoholic addict and I'd like to talk to you. And I said, you know what? You can talk to me, but I'm smoking crack and I'm drinking vodka. And you know what he said to me? Smoke it up and drink it up and let me talk to you. What if he had said, bye, call me when you're done and sober, where would my life be today? And this guy talked to me for 2 hours. And I just remember him saying a few things. I got 12 tools. I'll give you a tool a month. You'll never have to live like this again. I remember, and at the end of 2 hours, he handed me a piece of paper and he said, here's my number. If you ever get sick of dying, give me a call. And you know what? It just hit me hard. I mean, it hit me hard. But you know, then I thought, it's just not that serious. You know, what's up? What's the alcoholics and addicts? We are difficult. I weighed 93 pounds. I look like someone's well-kept French poodle. What the hell? And I just couldn't see it. But you know what? For the next 3 months, every time I would drink or light that crack pipe, I would hear that guy's, you never have to live like this. I got 12 tools. He was in my head. He was stuck in my head. And finally I called him, and you guys, a lot of you for my story. And I had a spiritual experience and I got sober behind a suicide attempt. And John was my sponsor for 8 years. But what a great guy. Oh my God. And thank God that he didn't give up on me, despite the living example of my friend. See, I had a living example, the miracle right opposite me, but there I was, my own way. Living example of my friend, there remained in me the vestiges, traces of my old prejudice. The word God still aroused a certain distaste. When the thought was expressed that there might be a God personal to me, this feeling was intensified. What feelings do you have when we say to you that there is a God that can be personal to you? I didn't like the idea. I could go for such conceptions as creative intelligence, universal mind, or spirit of nature, but I resisted the thought of a czar of heavens, however loving his sway might be. I've since talked to scores of men who felt the same way. There is an exercise you can do if you want to do it. Kimberly, who I'm taking through the work, is doing it. You can write down all the names in the big book that they're going to use for God, right? Creative intelligence. I just did a meditation on it. Creative intelligence, right? And you can write down the names. And then in a meditation, in a very fast, intuitive way, you say, God, show me what you mean to me as creative intelligence. God, show me what you mean to me as spirit of the universe. And then just write an intuitive thought that comes to you from God. It's a fabulous exercise. There's lots of names throughout the book. If you're interested in doing it, I wanted to share it with you because it's a beautiful exercise. Okay. My friend, Abby, this is Bill's step two right now. My friend suggested what then seemed a novel idea. He said, why don't you choose your own conception of God? This is the results now of his own conception of God. That statement hit me hard. Promise three, it melted the icy intellectual mountain. The intellectual mountain that I have stood in the shadow of has been reason, my mind, and logic. It melted the icy intellectual mountain in whose shadow I had lived and shivered many years. Promise four, I stood in the sunlight at last. It was only a matter of being willing to believe, step two, in a power greater than myself. Nothing more was required of me to make a beginning. Promise five, I saw that growth could start from that point of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Upon a foundation of complete willingness, that foundation is step one, a foundation of complete willingness. Promise six, I might build what I saw in my friend. Do I believe that what was built in Bill can be built in me? Would I have it? Of course I would. If I do what Bill did, do I realize that I can get the same results, that I can walk in the sunlight at last? Thus was I convinced, this is promise seven, thus was I convinced that God is concerned with us humans when we want him enough. At long last, promise eight, I saw, have I seen, have you guys seen? Have you seen right now, not when you first came in, not then, now, right now, do you see people that are miracles all around you? or do you just kind of slough it off? Have you fallen asleep to the miracles? Shit, I want to wake up to the miracles. There's miracles all around me. It's just freaking awesome. I felt. Do you feel? Do you feel the presence of God? I can't feel God, but I can feel the presence of God because God's not a feeling. If I felt God, I'd be God, but I can feel the presence of God. Do you feel the presence of God? I believed. That's promise number 8. Scales of pride, promise 9. Scales of pride. I don't need God. I can do it myself. Pride and prejudice fell from my eyes. These are incredible promises. You guys, these promises, they just flipped me out. And these promises in the second half of Bill's story are unbelievable. Promise 10, a new world came into view. You pay attention, you guys, to every time this book uses the word new, because they're telling us that a new world will come into view for me and every one of you in this workshop going through the work right now. It's not like a new world came into me 31 years ago. A new world comes into me every time I do the work, and it will come into your life every time you do the work. And that's why they use the word new. A real significance of my experience. Here he is again. He's back at Winchester. The real significance of my experience in the Winchester Cathedral, Winchester Cathedral, burst upon me. For a moment, I had needed and wanted God. He was desperate. He's World War II. He's heading to the fronts, and he went in there and he needed God. Do I need God today? Do I want God? That's promise 11. Promise 12. There had been a humble willingness to have him with me, and he came. But soon the sense of his presence had been blotted out by worldly clamors, mostly those within myself. Okay, Bill's still drunk. And on that previous page, on page 12, there are 12 promises. Okay. Now we're on page 13. Okay. What are the worldly clamors within myself today? That's always a consideration, you know, that might be blocking me from a deeper relationship with God. And so it was, so it had been ever since. How blind I'd been to God's presence. That's how blind I'd been to God's presence. Okay, now, at the hospital, I was separated from alcohol for the last time. This is Bill's 4th time in Towns Hospital. And I say to myself, he was separated from alcohol, okay? He didn't separate himself. He was separated. He didn't quit. He was quitted. He was quitted. I didn't separate myself from alcohol and drugs. I was quitted by God. God separated me. I didn't separate me. I couldn't have separated me. Treatment seemed wise, for I showed signs of delirium tremors. He says he was separated out from alcohol for the last time. And I say to all of you, and I say to me, am I separated from alcohol and drugs for the last time? Is this it? Because Dr. Bob says for good and all. We say, don't tell them that they have to make a commitment to quit alcohol and drugs forever. Oh, yes, they do. They can live one day at a time, but this is a life commitment. We're not fooling around. At least I'm not fooling around. Okay. Step 3. Here we go. Now, there I humbly offered myself to God as I then understood him, to do with me as he would. I placed myself unreservedly under his care and direction, admitted for the first time that of myself I was nothing, that without him I was lost. Oh, that's step 3. I ruthlessly faced my sins, you can say defects, and became willing to have my newfound friend, God, take them away, root and branch. That's 6 and 7. The previous one was 4 and 5. Okay. Not promises, steps. Okay. Root and branch. Now Bill refers to God as a friend. And that's one of the things I do when I'm taking people through the work and they're looking at some aspects of God. And I say to them, because they say also about seeing God as a friend on page 55. So I say, give me 3 attributes of your best friend. What characteristics does that best friend have? I'm going to tell you what my best friend has. I can tell her anything and she'll still love me. Okay. She forgives me no matter what. We work through everything. She is committed. She is honest and she is trustworthy. Okay. Those are good aspects to begin what you think God is, right? And she's forgiving. There you go. Okay. That's a good way to begin with someone that doesn't have any idea of what this God can be to them. My schoolmate visited me, Ebby, and I fully acquainted him with my problems and deficiencies. Step 8, we made a list of people I had hurt or toward whom I felt resentment. I expressed my entire, step 9, I expressed my entire willingness to approach these individuals. Admitting my wrong, never was I to be critical of them. I was to right all such matters to the utmost of my ability. Okay, that's step 9. Step 10, I was to test my thinking by the new God consciousness within. Common sense would thus become uncommon sense. Okay, that's step 10. Common sense is what most people use to make decisions. Common sense is rational thought, okay? We weigh it. That's what we weigh it. This is good. This is bad. This will happen if I do this. This won't happen. That's rational common sense. It's good to have common sense, but the book says common sense will be uncommon for you and I, right? Because we are going to operate with the sixth sense, God consciousness. I may come to a decision on things rationally in my head, but I'm always taking it to prayer and meditation for days to see, or weeks, whatever it takes for me to see what God has in store for me. Because it says after common sense in step 10 here, I was to sit quietly. Here's step 11. When in doubt, asking only for direction and strength to meet my problems as he would have me. Never was I to pray for myself except as my request bore on my usefulness to others. Then only might I expect to receive, and that would be in great measure. If I am doing things and praying for things that will increase my usefulness to God and others, it says that I'm going to receive also in great measure. What? That's a promise, but I didn't mark it as one. Okay. I forgot. Let me just go back. Okay. I'm sorry, you guys. I want to go back to the promises before I wrap it up. The first paragraph at the end of the steps, he says, I've not had a drink since. That's promise one. Do you see it? I've not had a drink since. Do you guys see that? Donna, do you see it? It's at the end of the first paragraph, the last line. Okay. That's promise one. Promise two is common sense would thus become uncommon sense. Step 10, that's promise two, okay? This is promise three. My friend promised when these things were done, promise three, I would enter upon a new relationship with my creator. This is step 12. I want you to circle new, because like I told you, a new relationship we will have every time through the steps with God. Here's promise four, that I would have the elements of a way of living, not a way to quit drinking, a way of living that which answered all, circle all my problems. Belief in the power of God plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility. Okay, the bottom of this page where he's saying that he will have the elements of a new way of living, this is a spiritual awakening. Okay, and I want to go back because I forgot to tell you on the previous page, go back to page 12 in the middle where Bill said that having his own conception of God melted the icy intellectual mountain in whose shadow he had lived. See in the middle of page 12, you guys see that? That is a spirit built, one of Bill's spiritual experiences. He has two in the book. On the bottom of page 13 is a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps, okay? Plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain the new order of things were the essential requirements. What is the new order of things? Put God first. That's the new order of things. Rather than relying on finances and emotions and money, we rely on God. That's the new order of things. And that is promise one. These were essential requirements. Simple, but not easy. A price had to be paid. It meant destruction, destroyed. Destruction of self-centeredness. We don't work on self-centeredness. It is destroyed. I must turn in all things to the Father of light who presides over us all. Turn to God, the Father of light, whatever God is to you, for destruction of self-centeredness. These were revolutionary and drastic proposals, but the moment I fully accepted them, the effect was electric. There was a sense, I'm going to give you the promises. I fully accepted them, promise two, the effect was electric. This is Bill's other spiritual experience, this paragraph. The effect was electric. Promise three, there was a sense of victory. Promise four, followed by such a peace and serenity as I had never known. Promise five, there was utter confidence. Promise six, I felt lifted up, as though the great cleaned wind of a mountaintop blew through and through. Promise seven, God comes to most men gradually, but his impact on me, here it is. Sudden, promise them, sudden and profound spiritual experience. The minute you walked in, I know people argue this with me, but give me a phone call and we can talk about it. With the minute that we walk into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, NA, any meeting that we walk into 12-step and we want to live instead of die, that is a profound and sudden spiritual experience because it's not of our own. It's not of our own doing. Okay. For a moment, I was alarmed and called my friend the doctor and asked, was I still sane? He listened in wonder. I had a really sudden spiritual experience behind a suicide attempt, and God spoke to me. And then I called John the next day, and I was completely changed. It was unbelievable. And I called John, and he told me about Bill's story. He said, oh, no, that's not unusual. It's in the book. So then I knew it was in the book, and it was great. And he believed me because it completely changed me. Finally, he shook his head saying, something has happened to you. I don't understand, but you had better hang on to it. Anything is better than the way you were. The good doctor now sees many men who have such experience. He knows that they are real. While I lay in the hospital, the thought came that there were thousands of hopeless alcoholics who might be glad to have what has been so freely given to me. Perhaps I could help some of them. They in turn might work with others. Who gave Bill that thought? I think God gave him that thought. I don't think that's his own thought. I think God gave it to him. My friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Particularly, was it imperative to work with alcoholics as he had worked with me. Faith without works was dead, he said, and how appallingly true for the alcoholic. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his, hold on, you guys, I want me to see what time it is. Okay, I'm doing okay. I just want to make sure I'm doing okay on time. And how appallingly true for an alcoholic. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink again. And if he drank, he would surely die. Then faith would be dead indeed. With us, it's just like that. Okay, so when people, you know, when it says in the doctor's opinion about taking that drink for ease and comfort, which I hope you all got the idea that we were all chasing a lie at the end of our drinking and using, we were chasing a lie. We were not chasing the truth. And that now we say, you know, that I need to get the same ease and comfort in the program I got when drinking and using. There's no way. That's just, to me, another lie, because what I've gotten in the program, no alcohol or dope ever gave me. What I've gotten in the program is so much better than what any mind-altering chemicals has ever given me. You know, I may get high one night on crack, heroin, and alcohol, right? And I may have a great time, but I'll tell you something, when I go to bed and I'm a mess and I wake up the next day, I'm not drawing on it. I'm not thinking about the two nights before how great it was. But this program, I draw on it. I think of the beautiful people that I sit opposite and work with. I think of this beautiful workshop I get such a beautiful opportunity to do with you. I think of it and it brings joy to me. I never had that. And it can be joy to me even when things are difficult, because if I don't sacrifice, I won't survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. It tells me I will have low spots. I will have trials ahead, but the power of God in me is greater than any trials I'll have. And if life's not okay, I can be okay. I can be okay inside because God is with me. And that's what the promise to me is of doing the steps this way. And it has happened in my life. Okay. My wife, now I'm going to tell you, could Bill, I'm going to read this paragraph. Could Bill rely on his profession, his finances, his emotions, and his feelings? What did his false dependencies nearly do? And I'm going to read the paragraph. My wife and I abandoned ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics to a solution of their problems. It was fortunate for my old business associates to remain skeptical for a year and a half, during which I found little work. I was not too well at the time and was plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. What's wrong with those guys? I only ruined their life for 5 years and they won't hire me. What the hell's wrong with them? This sometimes nearly drove me back to drink. But I soon found that when all other measures failed, here's promise one, work with another alcoholic would save the day. Just like it says on page 89, every single thing I do at some time will fail except working with another alcoholic. That's promise one. Many times I've gone to my old hospital in despair. On talking to a man there, promise two, I would be amazingly lifted up and set on my feet. And that is always what I experience. Promise 3, it is a design for living that works in rough going. And I've been around lots of you for a long time. We've had rough going. And I'm going to tell you, nothing will work in my life like working with another alcoholic or addict. Nothing. And every time, sometimes during my darkest times in sobriety, I'll think, that's not going to help, right? I don't need to do that. That ain't won't work. Even with long-term sobriety, the little midgets up there in my head, it won't work. You know, what are you going to do that for? And then I just go do it because I have these practices in my soul. And when you live and strongly live the practices will take you. You know what I mean? And I go do it because I know it's the right thing to do. I don't want to do it sometimes. And I do it. And I'm my feet are amazingly set on the ground. Promise 4, we commence to make many fast friends. And this paragraph right here has a whole bunch of promises. And I'm going to tell you that I like to use them as a checklist. Okay, let's ask ourselves as I go through this as a checklist. I have commenced to make many fast friends. Have I commenced to make many fast friends? Yeah, I have. Has a fellowship grown up around me, of which is a wonderful thing to feel a part of? BBA fellowship, that's promise 5. The joy of living, promise 6, I really have. Do you guys have the joy of living even under pressure and difficulty? Do you have that? That's promise 6. This is promise 7. I have seen hundreds of families set their feet in a path that really goes somewhere. I have seen it. I've worked with tons of people, over probably a couple hundred, and I have seen families reunited, their feet set firmly, and the miracle is incredible. That's promise 7. Promise 8. I have seen the most impossible domestic situations righted. Oh, I have. Ones that you think could never be righted. Has that happened for you? Promise 9, feuds and bitterness of all sorts wiped out. I've seen that in my own life by the grace of God and the steps in this program. Have you seen it? I have seen men come out of asylums. Promise 10, and resume a vital place in the lives of their families and communities. I've seen it. I've been part of it. Promise 11, business and professional men have regained their standing. Have you seen it? There is promise 12. There is scarcely any form of trouble and misery which has not been overcome. What a promise. And I have seen that in my life, and it has been overcome in my life. Lots of things that I would never think I could get through without picking up a drug or a drink, because I've leaned more heavily on God than I have on my own ideas, and this fellowship and the people, they have held me up. In one Western city or in its environs, there are 1,000 of us and our families. We meet frequently so that newcomers may find the fellowship they seek. At these informal gatherings, one may often see from 50 to 200 persons. Here's promise 1. We are growing in numbers and power. This is in 2011. AA is composed of approximately 108,000 groups. An alcoholic in his cups is an unlovely creature. Were you an unlovely creature when you were drinking and using? I sure was. Our struggles with them are variously strenuous, comic, and tragic. One poor chap committed suicide in my house. He could not or would not see our way of life. There is, however, here's promise 2, a vast amount of fun about it all. You need to circle fun because you need to have fun in recovery. Sometimes we get too damn serious. I'm going to tell you, I get too damn serious in recovery. I think that one of the hardest things on my journey, I'm an artist, and when I paint, I'll say that's fun, but I'm too intense when I paint. I'm just too intense. One of the hardest things for me, and Rachel, you know this, Rachel, one of the hardest things for me is to learn how to have fun. I don't know about you guys, but it's been hard for me, and it's been hard for a lot of people I sponsor to know how to. Rachel knows how to be silly. You don't know how to be silly, you call Rachel. To just be fun, have fun, and let it all kind of hang loose, it's hard. Joe C knows how to have fun too. He just got back from Palm Springs. Who flies from Texas to Palm Springs? That guy knows how to have fun. What the heck? Here we go. Okay, I suppose some would be shocked at our seeming worldliness and levity. humor, levity's humor, worldliness and levity, you know, joking about our crazy stories. Oh God, Mariana's on here. I wish Mariana would share one of her stories. Oh, when I came in this program, one of the things I love the most, the crazier the story, the better. I love the damn crazy stories people don't. Mariana's got a, oh, she's got crazy stories. Okay. But just earnestness, faith has to work 24 hours a day in it. Let's feel, here's, most of us feel we need, look no further for utopia. Utopia is a perfect way of life. We have it with us right here and now, promise four. We have utopia, the perfect way of life right here with us now. Now, if you don't think you have it, then you're not working the program right, because this is the perfect way of life. For me, it is absolutely everything I ever wanted. Each day, my friends, simple talk in our kitchen, promise five, multiplies itself in a widening circle of peace on earth and goodwill to man. Do I practice that? Peace on earth and goodwill to all men. Bill W., our co-founder, AA, died January 24th, 1971. Thank you, guys. God bless you. Okay, it's open for sharing. Please unmute and someone like to share. Anything you feel guided about it. You know what I mean? I want to tell you that one of the things when I work with new people in this chapter, I try to stay out of getting to the solution, the understanding, the bottom of their difficulties with God. We may talk about it a little, but it's going to be more in depth when we get to We Agnostics. So I just wanted to share that with you. Who would like to share? Hey, John, Jerry, Don, and Fernando, one of you guys want to share? The conference guys, the diplomats, that's who you are.
I'll share. I'm RJ Alcoholic.
Hi, RJ.
I'm jumping in. I wanted to thank you very much. That shit is badass what you just did. I loved how you broke the promises, and I've never seen it that way. But
oh, thank you.
The last thing I put on there, a peace on earth and goodwill to all men, and I also added to good peace on earth and goodwill to all men and women.
That's right.
I don't know why they didn't put that in, but I did. But anyways, back to the, I want to go back to the page before. Let me see. Actually,
we're not going back. We're not going back to the first half of Bill's.
No. But I'm going to go back to the work. Here's the thing. You touched on a couple of important things to me, Tyler. One of them is, spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice of others, right? Mm-hmm. We could not survive the trials and low spots. I just went over the questions with three other men before we met tonight. And I told them that was exactly what I shared, is that, well, I was in depression last year, you guys, with 27 years of sobriety. And one more time, the book and the steps and the power of God and Goddess and universe and Mother Nature and sunlight of the spirit worked again one more time, because I stayed in the fucking work. I mean, that's the truth of it. And it never fails, and it's never failed in my 27 years, you guys, never. It's when I don't do the work and I don't work with others and I run on self-reliance again and I'm running the show again and I'm playing God again, then I fuck shit all up again. I mean, that is just the truth. It's keeping it real simple. In the joy of living today, man, I had another spiritual awakening just in the last couple months ago. The spirit is alive and well, because the spirit did fall asleep again. And I'm alive and cracking and shaking and jiving and business is booming, because it wasn't. It was in the bedevilments, really. That's the truth of it. Because I was living again one more time in the bedevilments. And my name was all over that shit. And when you'd read the bedevilments, it just stabbed me right in my soul. I could just feel that pain, man. And, if you're new on here, you're going through the work for the first time or the 20th time, man, exactly what you said, Tyler, you will have another spiritual awakening as a result.
That's right.
Again. So thank you.
Thank you so much. John, Jerry, Don, and Fernando, one of the diplomats.
Hey, Tyler, it's Jerry. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jerry. So good to see you.
Nice to be here. I love how you break this down, first of all. Thank you so much. I have read this countless times, and it never hit me like it has tonight. It really, really
I'm just, so glad.
on page 9, right when we started off, the door opened, he stood there fresh skin glowing. There was something about his eyes. It brought me right back to it. I was 12-step. I was drunk. The last night that I was drunk, I got 12-step, just like you were saying. And it never dawned on me that somebody 12-step me, and it clicked. That was the night it clicked. I'd been in and out for 9 years, and that was the night it clicked. And it never, I've always had that wait till the guy gets sober thing, you know, call me when you're sober. No, I'm not, I wasn't sober, and it worked. So damn it, thank you for pointing that out. I mean, it's giving me chills right now. And then when we were reading through, the guy, going back to that, the guy, his name's Chris, he's a buddy of ours, and I'd been in and out of the rooms for 9 years, and his eyes were sparkling, and he had a shitty grin on his face, and I knew how that felt. That had a little time, but I knew at that moment I was dying inside. I was dying, and I got pissed at him because he had that starry-eyed look. But that also was a motivator for me. It helped me, you know, I wanted to get back to it, even though at that moment, AA was a cult, AA was brainwashing, and it didn't work for me. Here we are a long time later, and boom, yes, it does work if you apply yourself. I had never read in Bill's story here. I've always, you know, looking back on how my recovery's gone, and the promises have always just come, they've come true in my life, and they continue to come true. But Bill says it right here. He lays it out, and this is mm-hmm. just wrong with the promises right here, and it's right in the beginning of the book. I just never read it the way you just broke it down, so thank you for that, because my mm-hmm. life also applies right here just like the promises. So this has just been a unraveling of what's really being said by Bill, and in between the lines how you've done it. So I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, Tyler, this is Don. I want to share. Hey everybody,
thank you. Donna, I just am so grateful you're here, Jerry. I know you came in towards the end of the workshop a little, I mean, towards the end of it before it started. And I just want to say how grateful I am that you're here, and that I so appreciate your share. Thank you. Go on, Donna. Love to hear you, Donna.
You know, you mentioned like the different steps that we're taking here. We're transcribing in the book. We're meeting with our step guide, we're answering the considerations. So once I transcribed, and it's interesting that I am having, and every time I'm writing in a new big book, I'm having an experience with the writing. That's I don't right. have this experience when I'm writing doing any other work. Like if I'm at my job and I'm writing, there's nothing that's really happening between my hand and what I'm feeling. And I got to tell you, for the first time, and I'm taking people through the work, I'm going through the work again this time, how I never saw on page 13 and 14 all. God answers all my problems. I give him all things. He manages, practice these principles in all my affairs. And when we say that every time we go through, we have a deeper and closer relationship, and I'm feeling that. Mm-hmm. And as I'm reading it, you know, the real significance of my experience in the cathedral, well, I put the real significance of my experience on August 5th, 2000 is becoming more near and dear to me because I was separated from alcohol. I didn't stop drinking.
That's right.
It was when I stopped trying, there was enough space for God's grace.
Oh, yeah.
And how true it is when all other measures fail, because, you know, you mentioned it, you know, this is not a straight path in spirituality, because there's times when my job gets to be the most important thing. And I found waves of self-pity starting to weigh on me. Thinking about what I was going to do when I was going to retire, thinking about, oh my God, I injured my knee, yeah. I didn't go to the gym. And I'm thinking self. And I knew enough to go to a meeting and start sharing. And what transpired was 9 people sitting around my dining room table me working with them. And I remember I looked up and said, okay, God, I get it. So thank you for breaking down the promises. And it is good to say, well, am I living these promises? Am I experiencing these promises? So thank you. There's probably more I want to share, but I'm going to stop right there. But Tyler, thank you very much.
That's so beautiful. I so appreciated your share, you know, and using them like a checklist. Are they happening in my life? That's the way to use the promises, not just dangle them in front of people like carrots. Like, if you do this step, you'll do this. I don't do that with people. I don't think that's the right way to do it, because I've learned from some really great people. And like, you know, I just have to always acknowledge, you know, I've studied a lot and I've learned from so many great people, and I still study with certain people now, that it just isn't like something that comes natural to me. I have to study, and it takes me further, and God is taking us further. So thank you so much. Robert, would you like to share?
Yeah, I'll make this quick. My name's Robert. I'm an alcoholic.
You don't have to make it quick. I'm so glad you're sharing. Stop it.
Oh, okay. So something that...
Jan's laughing at me right now.
Something that I found funny in my own head as I was reading it, and then something that also is, you know, kind of serious as well. But so on the bottom of page 14, it says, how appallingly true for the alcoholic, for if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice, it tells me right there that I actually can do this perfect, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the joke. I'm kidding.
Oh.
Right? Because I can do it perfect if I do it long enough, right? Because I want to do it perfect.
You can't do it perfect.
But that whole part where he just breaks it down, you know, even before I'd ever done the steps, I'd had spiritual experiences, you know, just being sober and going to meetings and things like that. But when I would put a drink back in or a drug, I would lose all of that. And it didn't matter how bad I wanted it back, I couldn't get it back, you know. And that's how I interpret that first part on page 15 is, you know, not enlarging my spiritual life through work. And then I end up drinking and then I'm dead. You know, there's nothing I can do to pull that back out.
How do you enlarge your spiritual life? All of you sitting in this workshop, how are you enlarging your spiritual life? Bill says there's only one way. He doesn't say three ways. He doesn't talk about that first paragraph. Oh, get a different job and make more money. Oh, you need to move to a bigger house. Oh, no. Bill says, you know, self-sacrifice and working with others. That's how we enlarge our spiritual life. So I just had to say that, because that's only one way. Are you doing it? Are you going to do it? If you're not doing it now, are you going to do it? Or are you going to just turn this incredible program into another selfish program you do? Because I'm going to tell you, if you put working with others first, everything else will be added onto your life. You have a job problem, work with more people. Anyway, go on, Robert.
That was the part that just tonight popped out at me. It's funny how this book does that. So thanks for letting me share.
Isn't it funny how when you read the book and suddenly you see something and you go, I've only read this book 2,000 times. I never saw that. Still, that happens too. So I'm glad you saw it. Who would like to share if you don't want?
Tyler, is Dominic alcoholic?
Who is it?
Dominic. I'm with Chris Thomas.
Oh, I'm so glad you're sharing. Hi, Dominic.
Yeah, holy moly, I'm just so grateful to be a part of this group. And I first tried to get sober 31 years ago, and in and out. I've read the book, I've done the steps, but going through in BBA with RJ and now with you and Darcy, I was just blown away tonight, all the promises and all the little tidbits of history. And you know, I'm trying to figure out why I'm on fire, why I have the feeling that I'm feeling today, you know, and putting my all into the questions in the four parts of this program of BBA. And, you know, it's working. You know, I have my own conception of God growing up Catholic with nuns in the family and both sides. You know, I got my own conception of God, and you know, I'm not sponsoring, but I'm working with others and I'm self-sacrificing and my life is getting better. And I just love going through this. This is my third time, but today it just popped out. Like I'm relating to Bill and the story and it's awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I love what you're saying. That's beautiful. If you guys don't want to shout out, I'm going to call on you. Josie, do you want to share?
Hi, Tyler. Hi, everyone. I'm
Josie. Hi, Joe. I'm
a pathetic. Great share. I wasn't planning on sharing, but I just will say a few words.
you know, you have to share.
That was great. I really enjoyed you going through each of the promises, and thank you for taking the time to do that for everyone and letting us number them in the book so we could share that with other people. And I like a few things in this chapter that really stand out for me is why I go to meetings. Bill talks about going to meetings so newcomers can find our fellowship, you know, and how many times it's like, oh, I need a meeting. Well, really I'm going to meetings for others, you know, in a way. Like I'm going there to share a message of depth and weight to other people. And the other thing Bill talks about is common sense will become uncommon sense. And I can even look through this chapter and see where things seem very uncommon. I mean, even everything he's talking about with the steps, like this completely not common sense. Like I have problems going on at work. You know, I have problems going on in a relationship, but I'm not going to focus on that. I'm not going to attack it that way. I'm going to write inventory on it, do some amends if I need to, and get free from it over here. You know, so the things that I would think were common for me before, which is like, I'm attacking this head on. I have to think it through. I have to do these things. Even the steps that he's talking about, it becomes uncommon sense. Sitting in meditation. I have problems in my personal life and I work with others. Why would I work with others? What is that going to do? That's not going to fix my problems, but it does. You know, it does. It fixes the things that are going on with me when I'm not focused on me, you know? So there's just a list of things that I can look through this chapter and see how common sense becomes uncommon sense. And when I look at my life, I can see that and how the whole program, the way I live my life today in the program is not very, it's nothing that I was raised with. You know, it's beyond me and it has changed my life and it helps change the lives of others. And so mm-hmm. I just really love that part when Bill talks about that and how I can look at that in my life now. And going through this chapter, I like to look at, you know, where, like we talked about before, where am I still resistant? You know, he talks about religious people are right here. He talks about it again in the 11th step. You know, am I still fighting religious people? You know, is there still some agnosticism that comes up when I'm reading this chapter? And I can mark that in my book and say, yeah, there is, you know, I still have it, but I'm still willing to go through. And this idea of working with others, when he talks about, and I was just talking to someone before this group, you may not be in a place to work with others right now, but can you abandon yourself to the idea, to the enthusiasm of the idea of working with others, you know? And where can I still help and work with people or help other alcoholics and addicts now, even though I'm not all the way through the steps? I still have a lot to give, you know? Mm-hmm. I can still go to meetings and give a lot to people. I can sit and I can listen to them. And that is probably more of a gift than anything, is that other people can be heard. And maybe that's all I need to do, is to go in a meeting and listen to someone, you know, or let someone vent. And maybe that's me working with others now. But abandoning myself to the idea with enthusiasm of the idea of working with others, and maybe it's not working with someone exactly right now. So there's just so much in this chapter each time I read it. And you did an amazing job. And
thank you, Joe.
It's very beautiful. And I'm so honored to be here with you. Thank you.
For thank you, sweetheart. Who would like to share?
Hey, Tyler, it's Wendy.
I will.
I want to share.
Okay. First is Wendy. And then the second one after
Marie.
Marie. Okay. Hey, first, Wendy.
Hey, I'm Wendy and I'm an alcoholic and an addict. You know, I'm just like all fired up after listening to you, Tyler. My heart's pounding and it was so good. And you know, several things are coming to mind that I want to share about, but I'll try to get through them quickly. The first one is that, you know, until I did the BBA, the way I lived in recovery was really weak. I don't even know how I stayed sober for 8 years without with just going to meetings and barely doing the steps in the 12 and 12. Okay. It was like a very much of the skim of the steps, and I didn't have really much of a clue, and I didn't know how to share in meetings, and I never worked with anybody. Okay. So I was very selfish and I relapsed. So, you know, fast forward, I came back to AA 3.5 years later. I didn't really want to be back, but I tried to just do it by myself, and I realized I have to go back to meetings and just do this, right? So I got a sponsor, went through the steps, and at 14 months sober, was suicidal, and I felt like AA didn't work and neither did drinking, so what am I going to do? I really just felt like I didn't want to be here anymore, even though my life looked amazing on the outside, beautiful family, everything you can imagine was going my way, but I wasn't happy. And so shortly after that, I was introduced to the BBA, right? So I started going through it with Josie. And in step three, like, my sharing already was starting to change in meetings because two people asked me to sponsor them. And I was like, Joe, what do I do? And he's like, well, just take them through the work. And I'm like, but I'm not even done yet. And he's like, so what? Just start with step one. You're ahead of them. And so I did. And it was like really amazing. And so with working with others, I have not stopped working with others. I don't think there's been a time since I did the work the first time with Joe, and I've done it a couple times since then, and now doing it again, that I have not been working with others. And it is absolutely the bright spot of my life. Mm-hmm. And when I go to meetings, what Joe shared, I used to go to meetings because I felt very selfishly like, I need a meeting, I need to get fixed, I need to hear something that's going to help me. And what I've learned through BBA and through working with you and Joe is, no, that's not why I go to meetings. I go to meetings to share God's message, to share this work, to share what was given to me, to the newcomers, to give them the hope that this could work because of what it did for me. It changed my life. I was so on fire for it. You remember, you both came here. Joe came twice. Tyler came to Utah, did workshops, fantastic turnouts, mind-blowing. Like, I can't even believe the blessings, and I have to remember them because I forget so easily, but so much has happened in my recovery because of BBA. And then also, I just wanted to go over like how when I used to read the book, I would get so tired and fall asleep, and I was reading about Bill and, oh my gosh, he's just boring and I don't get this. And I'm reading about people that are outside over there. Like, I wasn't connecting at all. But when I started doing it the BBA way and changing statements into questions and asking myself and relating, and especially in Bill's story, it was a complete experience of me seeing that I was just like Bill, you know. And then getting to the second part, which we're in tonight, is like seeing all these promises, which I never even was aware of until I did this work. There are so many promises. Like, they only read like some of the promises in the meetings all the time, but people are getting sold so short because this book is full of promises if we choose to live this spiritual way of life. And so I'm just so grateful for this opportunity. And that's really all I have.
Thank you, Marie.
Tyler, thank you so much. I feel just the same as Wendy. I mean, my heart is pounding out of my chest, and I hope I can put this into words. I love what you read, the, like myself, he had admitted complete defeat, then he had in effect been raised from the dead. When I got to BBA, I felt no hope, and I was dying spiritually, mentally. And I wasn't using, I was not drinking, but there was nothing else that I was doing that was helping. And I certainly wasn't helping anybody else. No one ever asked me to be their sponsor. And I had sponsored years before, but anyway, I was raised from the dead when I got here. And I did a lot of work, and I don't even know when that happened. But what happened to me is all of a sudden, I felt completely like my whole outlook on life changed. And the greatest joy in my life today is working with others. I mean, I have people thank me that I'm working with, and I'm like, no, thank you. You know, thank you mm-hmm. so much for allowing me to be in your life, you know, and to be able to access you know, the spirit through working with others is what's really helped to change my life, you know, and seeing myself in the people I work with, you know, and going through the book again and again and again and finding new things. And, you know, it talks about my friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating principles in all my affairs. So I can't hold back on anybody anymore. I can't not forgive. I can't think badly of people, right? It's like, that's gone. And I mean, it's, I'm working on it. And it was particularly imperative to work with others as they, as he had worked with me. Faith without works is dead. And I found that so true in my first 15 years of sobriety, the last eight of which I took people through the work. But, you know, then I relapsed because I got a job and quit praying and working with others. And my life went downhill like a fast train. And I'm just so grateful to have come to BBA and been lifted up again and to have a relationship with my God that I never thought possible. I just didn't think it possible that I could live in this world the way that I'm living now, you know, and with a peace in my heart most of the time. And if I don't have it, I know what to do. So thanks so much, Tyler. I'm really grateful for this workshop. And
thank you.
My name's Dee and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dee.
Hey, Tyler, thank you so much for your lead, and thank you for reading the way you did tonight. And I want to go to question 16. That's the question I want to go to. It says, has your human will failed you? Did you really decide to start drinking or using again? Or did you just convince yourself it was your decision so you could feel like you were in control? And when I set up in Alcoholic Anonymous in Pacific Beach on Cass Street, I decided at 9 months sober to walk down those staircase and go out and say that I'm not alcoholic, that I'm not like you people, and to go drink. And I went out for 7 years. Mm-hmm. And I became so very bad, so very bad. And my mind said I could control it, that I am not like that, that I am not like an alcoholic, that I didn't crave it like I thought, like you people craved it. And in those years, I never thought that I could crave something so bad and so desperately and so tremendously that I could crave it like air, like the next air I breathe, and water. And now I know that there is nothing in me that can stop me from picking up. There is nothing. And when that question came that you said, can you stop? Can you stop yourself from picking up a drink when somebody push it to you? I thought about that all week. Can I stop from picking up vodka? When it came down the line at work on the rollers and it was a case of vodka, Sky Vodka, I looked at it and I didn't pick it up. I let another worker pick it up. And I say, I don't want to touch that today. I'm not going to put it on the pallet. I can't. And you know, when I leave things like that on the pallet, they know why. And somebody else will deal with it. And the reason being, and the reason why the book is so very important to me and I memorized pages in the book is because we had a member in our program and he used to always hold up the book and he would say, the book, the book, the book. And he taught me that. And 181 is a very important page. And it would behoove me not to squawk about such things. This problem is with me. I have not been relieved of it all the time. So my mouth can water at times, and it does. 6 years in of sobriety, my mouth does water sometimes. I'm not going to lie to you. When I see it, yeah. But higher power says, no, little girl, you don't get to enjoy those things. because the consequences are too great. And so I'm grateful to God that I don't have to do that anymore. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Dee. Who would like to share? Kimberly?
Hey, my name's Kimberly, addict alcoholic. Thank you, Tyler. Thank you as usual, just very insightful. And I feel like every time that I feel like there's certain voices that have an easier time reaching certain hearts. And that's why it's beautiful that we're all here. And you're one of those for me. And I feel like every time I walk away with a little something new. Tonight, I was like was shared by someone else, just this emphasis on all, it was really standing out to me today. This morning, so as you mentioned, I've been doing the meditation regarding the different names for God. And this is the second day in a row that I've been meaning to go deeper in terms of Father of Light. What does it mean to me, God, that you are the Father of Light? And so this is the second day in a row that I sat down in prayer and meditation intending to kind of do a dive there. And this is the second day in a row that I felt like my attention was pulled towards something else. And instead, I noticed that there was all mentioned twice in that sentence, and that really stood out to me. And it was just, for me, it was this notion, I found myself contemplating, what does it mean when it says I must turn in all things to the Father of Light who presides over us all? What does that mean to me? And so I had an experience this morning in prayer and meditation, just kind of looking.
I'm sorry. What you said.
Siri. but yeah, just kind of looking at I guess the totality of what God is to me today. And I love, and I say today, because that's another thing that stood out in the reading. When you were talking about new and all the times that new is mentioned in this book, in this particular section, that stood out to me tonight as we were reading. And I'm so very grateful that every time this book doesn't get old. This recovery, if this recovery gets old, then I'm doing something wrong. You know, you ask, are we associating with people that are on fire for their recovery? Well, gee, if we're not, you know, what, we're doing something wrong here, you know? And question 18, or what was it? Was it 18 or was it 19 rather? And it talks about, are we willing to abandon ourselves with enthusiasm with helping others? And when I saw that question, I thought to myself, well, enthusiasm, that's kind of a tall order right there. But I think for me, I feel tonight like that really speaks to that being on fire, that speaks to that gratitude. Because if we really realize what this is, that we have been raised from the dead, that we've been given another opportunity, how could we not be enthusiastic? How could we give that away? So I appreciate you walking me through this. I appreciate you walking us through this. And God bless and keep you, because we all need you for a lot longer. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Who would like to share? Unmute.
Good evening. Hi, Tyler. Thank you for your share tonight. It was amazing. Loved it.
Is that Mariana?
It's Mariana. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, Mariana, you got to speak up a little. Are you going to tell him the crazy story?
Which one?
The one about the grocery store. Oh, you guys, yeah. This is one of the craziest.
Yeah, so we were talking, Tyler and I were just chatting about Abby Thatcher and about his story about driving into the lady's house. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's really funny. And I thought, oh my God, I've done that. When I was drinking and I was driving home and I drove my car into the supermarket. And I got out of the car and I left the car and I took my 3-year-old son was in the car with me. So I took him out of the car. He had no shoes on. and we walked down the supermarket and I bought a bottle of Jack Daniels and a Teletubby ball for him, because that's what good mums do. They buy like a their children.
And then what?
And then walked home and stabbed my partner.
Isn't that a great story? Your partner lived.
That's a damn great story. So I ended up being charged with attempted
murder. Jessica's dying right now. Yeah. Such a good story.
So it started,
that's a real alcoholic.
It started off as just like a beautiful day. We had all gone out with them for a meal, and it was going to be a wonderful day, and ended up in the prison, ended up in the cells, and just charged with attempted murder, you know, from buying a Teletubby ball and a bottle of Jack Daniels. How did that happen? But one of the things that really, really shocked me is something that Jerry had said earlier about not realizing that actually I started to spiritually awaken when I was drunk. I was so drunk, lying in a bail flat. My brother had broken in with the police and a social worker to see that if I was all right. And I was lying so drunk, naked, underneath a duvet with a bucket of sick beside me. And my brother shouted at me, "You're one step away from being a bag lady. Look at you." And something happened. And it was like I woke up and I was so drunk. And I woke up and I immediately thought of this man that had come to the rehab, and I wanted to get in touch with him. He was from AA. There was something about him. He had the starry-eyed look. He was clean, and he, you know, like the way Bill describes Abby. And I just wanted to get hold of this man and ask him, beg him for help. And that day, even though I was so drunk, I got myself organized and went and tried and sought help that day, even though I was so drunk. And I never saw that until we talked about that. Never saw that I was drunk and that carried that message to me, and then actually started my sobriety, kind of kicked off that day. Never saw that. And the other wee thing that I just want to add is about when you pointed out about God being called as a friend with a capital F. Oh my God. And then thinking like, what would my best friend be like? And could I transfer that into like God? And I have used that so much since we've spoken. I've spoken to other people. I want to carry this message now, whereas I didn't really before, but I want to carry it now. I feel like I've got depth and weight, like Joe said. I feel like I've got something, and I'm only at the beginning. So thank you so much. Thanks, everybody, for what they're sharing. I love it. Thank you.
Thank you. We can stay if people want to share a little longer, maybe for a couple more shares, if Kylie's okay. Kylie, you okay?
I'm good.
Yeah. Okay, it will stay for two more shares, or if there are two people that would like to share, and then we'll wrap it up.
Hi, I'm Vanessa. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Vanessa.
Hi. Thank you so much. That was really great. And, you know, it was cool because we often are talking about how we look at these pages to see where we're not willing, you know, when working with a person. But what was cool today is we kind of took that second part, which is like after we've done the eighth step, to go back and look. And it was really fun to kind of to go through it with you in that way. So thank you for that. And just seeing the promises and so many things that people have said, I share already, I won't repeat them, but I'll just talk about additional things that came to mind for me. Were I really love the consideration about the worldly clamors. I hadn't thought about that before. And it's really, you know, looking at those things that block me from my higher power and seeing like, what things are those today, you know? And I was just speaking to someone about, before this, about my attachment to my thinking in terms of fear of dying, and how, you know, it's like the fear of losing my thoughts. And I thought, isn't that funny? Because the problem is my thinking. And yet I'm so attached to it, right? And so it was interesting because I thought, you know, that's part of those like worldly clamors, you know, that you know, those things that just the noise, you know, that blocks me from my higher power, from hearing that, you know, that intuitive thought. So that it's really great. That's a great consideration. And I too, like, was really, for me, it was a really helpful thing when someone pointed out friend, my first time through BVA. And that was something that, you know, my higher power,
I really use that a lot. And I still, to this day, I do a little shimmy because I think of like a friend who you sit so close, like your shoulders touch. And I always think like, there's my higher power right there, you know? Mm-hmm. And the other thing I just wanted to say is like, I'm so glad you talked about the fun part because, you know, like that's something that for me over this past year with COVID, like one of the things I'm so grateful for is the time that I had to grow my relationship with my higher power and be with myself and have fun. And like, I had fun with myself and I had fun with my higher power. And I'm really blessed and lucky that, I mean, some people would be really upset and depressed that they were alone, but I was so grateful because I had that time to really work on that relationship with my higher power as my friend. And like, we have fun. Like we dance around the apartment. Like we have dinner dates, you know, like it's really great, you know? So, I mean, that's just something that I'm just so grateful that I was able to cultivate even more of that over this past year. So I just wanted to share that. Thank you.
Thank you. One more share, one short one. Anyone have one? Okay, we're gonna wrap it up then. I wanna thank everyone for being here tonight and sharing this with Joe, myself, and Kylie and Jan. I wanna thank Kylie and Jan for helping to host this for all of us and putting in the time. I so appreciate them. I wanna give you a quick little rundown of some of the idea of how this is gonna roll out. It's not set in stone, but I like to share with you so you kind of know, you know what. Next week, I'll be doing the first half of There Is a Solution. The following week, Joe C. will be doing the second half of There Is a Solution. I'm hoping that we'll talk to you as a group to see that we maybe could stay or start 15 minutes early or stay 15 minutes later for more about alcoholism and do the whole chapter. So that will put us faster into the bedevilments. I've done it before with Joe. Because one of the reasons I split There Is a Solution, because there's two main focuses in There Is a Solution. There's finishing the physical craving to see if I'm a real alcoholic and then switching to the mental obsession. And if you try to do the whole chapter, you lose the two focuses. And it's not a good way to do a workshop. So I don't do that. But in More About Alcoholism, we can do the whole chapter, Joe and I, but we'll have to add about 15 minutes on to the meeting, which I know is long, but you guys consider this. And it puts us then the following week into the spiritual malady. Okay. So that's just some idea about how we're doing the next, you know, month or so. And then it goes much faster. Once you're in step three and we're rolling and it goes faster. I know that step one is a little bit trudging. This is where the word trudging came from, doing the BBA first step. This is what I think. But the experience is wonderful. So I'm going to give you some notes for homework or some considerations if you want to do it. This isn't a have to. This is just some added stuff that I do when I work with people. Vanessa's saying 15 minutes early. Is that what you're saying? That's fine with me because you guys are on East Coast. I would much prefer to do that for you guys, believe me. So just remind me, okay? Homework, There Is a Solution. First half, which ends on the top of page 23. Then we go into the mind. I asked each person, each one of you, to talk to a normal drinker. I want you to ask a normal drinker about the physical craving. I want you to ask them about the loss of control. Can they go to the bar and have two drinks? What if they have three more than they want to? Can they stop and can they leave? Can you go and drink two drinks most of the time when it gets time to go? Can you do it? If something bad in your life happened, like that you had to quit drinking, could you quit drinking? Ask this regular, normal drinker. I don't want you to talk to an alcoholic. I want you to talk to a normal drinker, even a hard drinker. I want you to talk to them about your physical craving and talk to them about their physical craving, not the mental obsession, physical craving. Because I have found, I do this in all my workshops, I have found that you can find out sometimes more about the physical craving and the difference by talking to a normal drinker than you can another alcoholic sometimes, because you see the difference. Does that make sense, Vanessa? You know what I mean? It's a very good exercise. You don't have to do it. It's just something that's helped. Okay. The other thing is I take a moment in the next couple chapters and look at to the chapter. We don't go into the last four chapters, but look at the chapter to the wives. They describe four types of alcoholics. I want you to look at those four types and see what type you are.
In the chapter to the wives.
And that's, they describe it, get it to see which one you are. Okay. Does anyone have any questions?
Yes. I'm sorry, Ms. Tyler. Do you mind going back over the direction one more time? I got, can you have two or three drinks normal for the normal person?
Just talk to a normal drinker or a hard drinker about physical craving. Talk to them how physical craving affects you and ask them how it affects them.
Okay.
Okay. And then do the chapter to the wives. There's four type of alcoholics. Just look at the types and see what type you are. Page 108 to 110, Vanessa said. Of course she knows that page. Thank you, Vanessa. Okay, any other questions? We're gonna wrap it up. I wanna thank all of you for being here with me and bless you all. It's great for me to be here with you. And RJ, you know the next assignment is the first half of There Is a Solution. RJ, would you like to take us out in the Serenity Prayer?
I would love to. God.
God, grant me the serenity.
Accept things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Have a beautiful evening, everyone.
Love you all. I'm on for a few minutes. If you-